Today I'm going to talk about real progressive enhancement, and it was quite cool so far that every speaker here has talked about the same thing, and every one of us had a different approach to the same subject matter, and that is exactly where we are right now. We are inventing new things almost daily. There's great new technology coming out. I'm getting really excited about this, and I want to reinvent the web as it is right now. I've been working on the web for 12 years as a developer. And I'm tired of fixing things. I'm tired of working for browser bugs or around browser bugs, and I want to write things for users. I want to get things out there that people can use. And progressive enhancement is a way of doing that, and John has mentioned some of that, that especially on the mobile market, it's the only way you can stay sane as a developer. And it really is that way, because it's quite funny when we live in this little bubble that we have right now, where we talk to each other about great technologies and we see our phones are the ones that are used everywhere. And then you start traveling and you go into a university that is a really good track record university, and they have a 2 megabit line for every student out there in one IP. And you're like, wow, this is how people work on the web as well here. This is how the next generation of developers have to work. And that's something we should think about. It's why progressive enhancement comes in quite nicely. There were a few different approaches to the same thing, and we all talked about one thing, and that's the new HTML5, and that's what we're talking about right now. And HTML5 is amazing because we need to reboot the web. We need to reboot the way we're writing applications. We need to reboot our approach to HTML and our approach to building things for users out there. Right now we're hacking. We're building random things and we hope they work. When the Ajax revolution was out, we broke everything that was there before. Back buttons didn't work anymore. We had no bookmarking. We had no real URLs. We did not understand that when we do a request, we also have to put a timeout on it, because if the thing doesn't do anything for a minute, people just think their computer is broken and shut down their browser instead of just our app. And HTML5 gives us all these things. And Bruce was talking about this, that people say, put everything into HTML5 right now. I'm quite sure we will soon see the first SEO HTML5 consultants and social HTML5 guys. And I don't care, you know, as long as the media talks about our stuff and listens to people that have good things to say, that's great. Because we have to understand that we're in the middle of a revolution and we're in the middle of changing something that is for good. The web is out there as a media that is read and write. It's not a television set where I sit in front of it and I hope that the newscaster has my opinion or has a good opinion and isn't tainted. On the web, I can look at 10 different things, mash them together, and then get the gist of that. And that's what the web is about. So HTML5 said, like, okay, the HTML4 is not going anywhere. XHTML is a pain. XML is not the future of the web, so we want to do something different. So they said, let's reboot it, let's analyze what's out there and start something new. I'm not quite sure if reading out all the class names and IDs that people are using and basing on that how to build something new was the right approach, but it worked out. Because the thing is, if we had done it right, we weren't in the situation that we are right now, that half of the apps are broken. So most of the code that we have on the web right now is generated by machines, not by knowledgeable humans. And that's where HTML5 can come in as well. We don't need these pre-processes anymore. Beware of truisms, though. A lot of people would say, like, okay, HTML5 allows you everything right now. Standards don't matter. Go wild. Write whatever you want. Which is cool. It's fine. But if you work in a team, my dogma about writing is, or my idea about writing code is, that I write code for the next person that takes over from me. And I don't need to expect that that person is as clever as me or stupid as me or likes the same notation, likes the same way of doing uppercase, lowercase. And there's just a standard helps us to actually predict that somebody else can work with our things. So what the HTML5 working group is doing is great. There's like innovation, there's untethered things going on, people are going nuts about everything. And in W3C, we look at that, or they look at that, and make it really worthwhile for everybody. Think about all the consequences that these things have, rather than just like, this should be it, because we all do it that way. So HTML5, and that's one truism that annoys me, it does not mean building apps for iPad, iPhone, or Android. A lot of people right now, I write HTML for my iPad. When the iPad came out, people told me like, oh, do you change your blog now so it actually looks really good on the iPad? No, my blog is an RSS feed. I expect you to read my blog in Google Reader or whatever else you use, not to go to my blog and look at the shiny logo. I write things there. And I don't think it's necessary right now to write something for one device and then say, oh, it's HTML5, that's the future. I mean, it's cool to write on the iPad. Of course, it's fun, it's great to touch. I mean, you see kids playing with it, you see that's the future of computing. But at the same time, it's one device. It is one device by one vendor that is basically targeted on consuming the web, not taking part in the web. And to me, I came from radio originally. For me, the web was the revolution because people take part and mix and match and do things on the web instead of just sitting there and just looking at a video. So we have to find a way to do that. So if people tell you they do HTML5 and the thing only works on an iPad and they put it on the web anyways, they're doing it wrong. They're building something cool and expect you to have a certain piece of hardware which you might not have. So I can understand that. I can understand it for developers, especially with HTML5 and CSS3 and JavaScript, that you want to stay in that comfort zone. And this is what iPad and iPod development or iPhone development is. You know this is going to be that rendering engine. You know it's going to have these specifications. You know it's going to work that way. So you don't have to worry about the edge cases and what if somebody has no JavaScript, what goes on. You know already the environment. And that's one of the dirty secrets of Apple hardware, because Apples are so cool and OS X is so cool because they can define the hardware. They don't have to support every video card out there, write drivers for everything. It's much easier to do that if you are in a comfort zone. And as developers, where we have a project manager on our back actually stabbing us already, we want to stay in that one. But it's so much better to get out of it. Because building for the web means open development. When I started, when I saw the web for the first time, and I'm like, Jesus, I can see a website from China. I don't pay per minute to call somebody in China to talk to me. I can actually take something and get CNN news without having a television set. This is actually pretty cool. This is a Twitter client in Russia. So they have these things where you can actually go somewhere and send a tweet. If Twitter were new Twitter as it is right now, where the basic focus is going to the website rather than having an API, this thing would not work. Twitter was an awesome success because it was an API, open for the web, and people can build all kind of interfaces to it. I wrote this article a few years ago, 7 Rules of Unobtrusive JavaScript, and the other day I came across this. Somebody had translated my article into Chinese and sent it out to other people. And I'm like, that's great. It's Creative Commons. And you're allowed to do that. I did not have money for somebody to translate my articles into Chinese. But as I put them on the web, people do that for free for me. And that's just great. That's what the web is about. This is probably the thing that that I was most proud of in the last few years that I built. That's Easy YouTube. Everybody seen that? Anybody seen that? It's an interface to YouTube for people with learning disabilities. A friend of mine works for an agency that does things with learning disabilities, and she asked me, like, a video player, at a conference, she was saying, a video player for people should be like this. Big buttons, not much stuff around, no blinking ads. It's just confusing. People learning disabilities learn a lot from videos, but YouTube was too confusing for them. So I built a YouTube interface that looks like My Little YouTube or Fisher-Price YouTube. And it was easy to do because there was an API and I just wrote some HTML around it. And these are two videos where people with different disabilities for the first time are able to see a video of themselves or are able to do a video research that was completely blocked off by them. So by me writing 10 lines of JavaScript and a bit of HTML, I empowered people to take part in the web and to learn from it. And this is what is the cool thing about the web right now, and it always was. So this was after the interview, at the end of the videos, he says, like, you can leave now, I don't need you any longer to watch my videos. And how cool is that? I empowered that person, she does not need anybody else to say, click this button, do this. We empower people with our stuff that we put on the web, no matter what it is. And if you put something cool there and it stays there, thank you, do more of that. The tube strike was on, and on the day, the BBC and some other people released this OpenStreetMap mashup that showed you which tube stations are closed and where there are disruptions. People can tweet it, people can send it in. Why was that possible? Because it's a website. It was really easy to set up. Snap, here's this website. If I build an app and they had to get it into an app store, get it approved, people have to download it to their Android phones, this wouldn't have happened. The web empowered people immediately to not go to the tube station that is closed, because the TfL website itself is not easy to navigate, and most of the time when there is a strike, it's actually offline. So I have this ding moment from time to time where I just look at the web and I'm like, this is so cool. I'm going to Frontiers after this. Actually, I'm flying tomorrow. And my talk there will be why it's amazing to be a web developer. And it is. We're doing such cool work right now if we do it, if we just embrace the web as what it is, the new media, the read-write media, and not just like, oh, yes, let's look at videos. We're also in the middle of browser wars. And this was a bad thing. That was actually really, really bad. There was evil practices being done last time. And it gave us a lot of grief over the years that we had to protect, support different browsers to the fullest. So they had to look the same in each of them. And both of them weren't quite implemented and were really bad, actually. And nowadays, the browser war is better because people actually fight over the implementation of a standard that has been defined. The great thing about the HTML5 standard is not that it is a new, that there are sections and articles and there's a few new markup things. It actually defines, 70% of it defines how a browser should render it. And this we did never have before. We just hope that browser vendors made a good judgment about how that thing should look. So the browser wars now are all about like who's faster, who's implementing it better, and who has the nicer Chrome. And I love that. I love that the browsers are all more or less working the same way. We still have glitches, but the browser wars now are good wars because we're working on the same goal. So HTML5 means moving from hacks to web applications. I said that before. I don't want to hack for browsers. I want to write a web application that is solid and works. And I understand that people are scared of the web, that people rather build an iPhone app and make a lot of money in the first week than just build something for the web. And the web is scary. There are so many different browsers out there, so many configurations. People turn off things. There's timeouts. There's bad connections. So I don't want you to be scared, so I'll show you some kittens whose tails make a heart, so to calm you down a bit about the web. And there's this myth about a constantly upgrading web. Yes, I upgrade my Firefox every 2 days, or my nightly Chromium, and I have a new computer because my company gave me one. I also have a really old computer at home that runs Ubuntu that I do my surfing on. I don't update that one to the newest Chrome or something because it's too slow for that. So just because we get excited about new hardware and buy it every time it comes out, and in Apple's case also wait for the second edition so we can buy it again so it has all the features that it should have had in the first one, not everybody does that. Not everybody has the time or cares that much. For example, our government. The HM government has announced its undying love for Internet Explorer 6 until 2014. And there was a petition to tell people like government departments should upgrade away from Internet Explorer 6 because it's a pain to actually build things for and it's a security problem. And the answers were interesting because there's no evidence that upgrading away from the latest fully patched versions of Internet Explorer to other browsers will make us more secure. From their point of view, totally understandable. Upgrading these systems to IE8 can be a very large operation, taking weeks to test. Understandable too. People have set up their computers differently, and I don't want to work in a big corporation where I have to set up people's computers. That's why most of the time they just ghost the machine when something goes wrong rather than fixing or installing it. It is therefore more cost effective in many cases to continue to use IE6 because all the software that they run internally is written for IE6 only in 1999 or 2000, because that was the easiest way to build software, much like writing for the iPad is now. So we could repeat the same mistake and be in the same situation 5 years from now. So covering our eyes and saying like, oh no, we don't want to think about that, IE6 is here to stay, as John said, it just happened. And this is why we need progressive enhancement. Progressive enhancement does not mean making it work for IE6. That's what a lot of people are like, yeah, but I don't want to do for IE6. Well, then don't get the fancy stuff to IE6, only put the things there that work. It means test the support before you apply. Don't jump into the river without realizing it's not deep enough, because you hurt yourself. Don't access a JavaScript object without testing if it really exists. Don't expect a browser to have a certain functionality just by calling it. Test for it beforehand. There's a wonderful library called Has.js, which tests JavaScript features of the language itself in browsers. And there's a cool, really, really cool library called modernizer.com, which adds classes onto the HTML element in accordance to what that browser supports in HTML5 and CSS3. So you can write your CSS according to that class, and then you know it will only be applied into the browsers that really support it and don't choke on it and try like to display something that doesn't work properly. So this is GeoMaker, and this is a data table. Data tables, JavaScript enabled here, and you can sort by the real name, you can sort by the type, by the where on earth ID, latitude, longitude. This one uses YUI, so it's keyboard enabled, everything is cool. I turn off JavaScript, I reload that page. All the stuff that I show here is on GitHub, so you can play with these things later on as well. So without JavaScript, it's just a table with checkboxes. And that works for Internet Explorer 6, that's all it needs. Don't try, I mean, you can with YUI, we tested it on IE6, but I'm tired of fixing it for that browser. Like, a table like that works as well. And this is what progressive enhancement means. This works, the other thing is much cooler to use, much nicer to use, much easier for the end user. Same here, UK house prices. I can select an area of London, of England here. I can see the house prices and I get a map, and these charts are actually CSS only, so they work everywhere. And when JavaScript is available, I want to have a different experience. Here I can now see the house prices in one area at a time. And this is cool, but really what is better is comparing two house price areas next to each other. So I do that. If I turn on JavaScript, these drop-downs turn into an autocomplete and into a nice slider. As I use YUI, this also works on an iPad with touch interface and everything. So I didn't have to learn how to write any of these things. I just used a library to pop it in there. And now you can see the house prices compared to each other. And I got listings from Nestoria as I'm going through JavaScript, and I'm actually calling things from YQL as well. Could have done that on the server, but I thought on the server all I need to know is that information. And with JavaScript, I got a better interface, I got a more intuitive interface, and some say it might be prettier. I'm not a designer, but I'm doing my best to do something interesting here. And this is what it is about. Make something work, then make something better. For a lot of developers, this looks like extra effort. Like, oh my god, I have to do it like in HTML, and then I do it in JavaScript again? That's just annoying, I don't want to do that. And that's why we produce low-quality fallbacks. When people build something awesome in JavaScript and then like, oh well, look, you get like 15 clicks and you get this first piece of information. No. Write something that works for everybody, then improve it. New technologies can be safely applied with a few lines of code. Local storage, for example. I'm a big, big fan of local storage. It's such a wonderful, easy API, and cookies are just painful to use and annoying. So 15 megabyte cookies. This is the Firehose research interface of Yahoo that we showed outside. It gets you social updates from anything that happens on the Yahoo interface, on the Yahoo website, and you search for something. So I have these checkboxes here that I said, look for Yahoo, Google, Twitter, YouTube, and Vimeo. And I look for HTML5, and it loads a bit longer, and then it finds all these cool updates. So I thought, okay, this is a good research interface. What if the user comes back later on? I wanted to keep the state, but I didn't want you to have to log in. I didn't want to use cookies. So right now, I go in between, I go to the Yahoo homepage or whatever I wanted to do in this screencast. Yeah, I went to the Yahoo homepage. And then I go back to that interface. And the interface tells me, hey, you loaded me before, I set the state again. So I tap a notice here, we restored your last search for you, this is not live data. So you get back to where you ended up last time. If your browser crashed, that would still store it, because every time you do a search, I put it into local storage. And this is the code that I needed to do. If local storage is supported, then get the element web ID main form. If there was a PHP post, set the item state to the inner HTML of the form, otherwise write it out again. So I'm caching the whole website in the 15 meg of local storage. I could have gone through like which one was clicked and create an object and store the object. Didn't mind, I just knew it was not going to be 15 meg, so I just stored the whole inner HTML. That can be done with any form right now. And this gives you state retention. So we build all these cool widgets on the web. We have like autocomplete controls. We have calendars. We have color pickers. We have ranges and like sliders. And we have upload controls that allow you to upload multiple files. And all of them use JavaScript. You can progressively enhance some of them, and you should, a slider should be an input field if it can't be available, not a div, because then at least people can put something in. Wouldn't it be great to just be able to use them? Wouldn't it be great if I didn't have to worry, does the browser right now support this? Can I do this? Wouldn't it be nice if we don't have to write a massive widget to support every browser, but just make it work? And this is where that person comes in. Dave Glass, I get very excited every time he actually talks to me on Messenger, not because he's so pretty, but because he's an absolutely stunning developer in terms of pragmatism. And what he's done is this side. As you can see, he's not a designer, but it's a page that you reload, and let's have JavaScript on right now, and call a YUI calendar, and call a YUI data table, and a tab view. So these are all the things, the widgets that you get copy and paste from the YUI website, and they work in JavaScript, as you can see here. This is all on the client. It doesn't go to the server at all. JavaScript does that for me. I now turn off JavaScript, and I click on this one, which is also in JavaScript. I click on this one, which is also in JavaScript, and I click on any of the others in JavaScript as well, because we render the YUI controls on the server in JavaScript. So instead of maintaining an HTML-only version or a PHP version, we just take the thing and write it on the server. As YUI is completely encapsulated in itself, you can run it outside a browser. You can run it on the command line. And that's what we did here. So we use Node.js, Express.js, and YUI 3 to use high-class widgets and really good JavaScript widgets on the server side and the client side. You don't have to write your code anymore in two spaces. You do it in JavaScript and render it on both sides. There's a video out there with him explaining all of that, and I can show it to you later if we've got time, but probably not. And it's just stunning. It's just wonderful that I can write a JavaScript widget and run it on the server side and the client side, so I don't need to worry if the browser supports it. If I say Internet Explorer 6, I say, like, render it on the server, give me HTML back. And that works out. It's really fast. It works with Node.js. It's on GitHub. You can try it out yourself. Even more interesting is that today's widgets are already tomorrow's native controls. You have the data list for the autocomplete. You have the type color for the color picker. This one is only supported by the BlackBerry browser for some reason in the HTML5 control. You have a type range. You have a type date. You have a type file. All of these things are already done. So we can reuse these things. So I'm talking to the YUI team right now to get the results from our user testing and donate that to browser vendors to implement native controls based on the user research that we've already done. So let's talk about the thing that everybody is very sexy, thinks is very sexy. It's the CSS animation and transition, which Bruce showed can be rather annoying to have to type in for every browser out there. So in YUI 3, what we've done is we actually wrapped it in the animation library. So you can use CSS3 animation and transition syntax and just use it in the JavaScript library. This means browsers that support it do get the animation and do get the hardware acceleration with it. Other browsers get a JavaScript animation that does exactly the same thing that your CSS3 animation does. Again, write it code once and reuse it in where it's applying rather than where it might apply. On-demand loading allows for enhanced support without overhead. So YUI's new intrinsic loader actually loads data according to which browser is in use. So instead of putting all the code in there that is necessary to fix things for Internet Explorer, we only keep the code that is actually necessary for the browser in use right now. So Internet Explorer 6 gets more code, real browsers get less code. Last but not least, it's time to think about our development stack. And I'm rushing a bit here because I'm running out of time. This is a great blog post that Dan Katt from X-Flickr has done the other day, where he talked about scaling of apps and redesigning websites and people complaining about it and why you do it. And what he's done here is that he realized that the cool stuff, the real-time social stuff, is what 5% of the users use, but actually it breaks your website. This is where our architecture right now falls apart, and this is the next talk, I guess, a lot about it. So in Douglas Crockford's Loopage talk, he talked about the problem that AJAX is stateful, HTTP is stateless, TCP is sessionful, IP is sessionless. So we have this completely mix of technologies that are not there yet for real-time web, for real-time updates. And this is why we have to rethink our architecture approach. And Node.js and event-driven architecture for server-side are a very, very good idea there. So take a look at that. Take a look at Elko as well. So the future of web apps is being forged right now. We have the future of web apps in our hand. It's not building things for the iPad and putting a little app into an app store. It's about making the web available for everybody, real applications that work, and code that people can understand, and let computers do the things that we shouldn't be doing. I don't want to write 5 lines of CSS animation to support every browser. A JavaScript library can do that for me. Be part of the movement for a better web for all. You all have the power, you all have the chance to go to the What Working Group, to follow the W3C, to talk to people and say, like, I've got an idea. Every idea is important right now, especially when it comes to implementation in your environments. So come and talk to us, talk to Google, talk to Apple, to Mozilla, to Opera, to Microsoft. Your input really matters because we want the future of web apps, and HTML5 is that future of web apps. And I'm out of time, so thank you very much.